Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yo, what's up? Alton Our Stars podcast. That is the name of the show. My name's Chris Payne, and I'm really excited to share this episode with you. This is with an artist who made one of my most favorite albums of the year so far. I know the year 2016 is not very old yet, but their album is one that I'm pretty sure when year-end lists and that sort of thing come by, I'll be thinking about it a lot, and I hope a lot of other people will be thinking about it too. The name of the artist is Chairlift. The name of their album is Moth. It came out not that long ago, and both members of Chairlift, Caroline and Patrick, came by the Billboard office to chat with me about all sorts of things. Their music is really interesting. It's really, really hard to categorize. It kind of sounds like R&B a lot of the times, but they mix in like electronic music and indie music. Honestly, I don't even know what the word indie music means anymore, but all of this comes together and it's a really good thing. Even some new age vibes in there, some new age influence, which came up in this interview and led to a really interesting discussion. We talked about their live show. We talked about this factory in Brooklyn where they record all their stuff. Patrick produces other artists. He gave us little hints of what he's working on next. Really, really fun conversation with these two. They're awesome. I had a blast doing this. So yeah, and if this is your first time listening and you enjoy the show, then it would be awesome if you just dug into the archives. They're all there for you. If you go to billboard.com or go to iTunes, search for Alton Our Stars on iTunes, go through the archives. Recently this year, we've had Borns on the podcast. We've had Ra Ra Riot on the podcast. Had Panic at the Disco on the podcast, had Ocho Nouveau, Bully, Magical Clouds, lots of fun stuff to dig into. Also, in iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast. Giving us a star rating helps a lot with everything we do, and just specific feedback. Hit us up. Definitely want to hear from you guys. But most of all, just thank you for listening. So here it is, Chairlift on the Alton Our Stars. Enjoy. Yeah, so here at the Alton Our Stars podcast with Chairlift. What's up, guys?
Hey, Chris.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. I'm excited to talk to you guys. One thing I definitely wanted to ask you about, it was like on my mind since you guys dropped Cha Ching, but then it got answered for me because you did the genius.com annotation. Mm-hmm. As soon as you dropped the song, it was the first single for the new album Moth, Cha Ching. It was like, what is 2799-23?
Mm-hmm.
And then you revealed the secret that it was what?
It was the combination lock to our studio at the time. But the idea wasn't that it was referring back to our studio. That was just a handy number that we had. We really wanted it to be, you know, a combination lock in general, sort of mm-hmm. the secret password or sort of your lucky lotto numbers or even like the, you know, a number someone could use to unlock their phone with or something, but just a sort of secret code that could be passed along.
Okay. So you guys are going on the road soon. Have you changed the combination?
We have changed the combination.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to know the new combination? It's not as catchy.
Don't tell them, Patrick. You don't.
I'm not going to tell
you. Jump in there and do some secret recording session. Yeah. Oh, a podcast. That's what I would do because I don't make music myself, but I do podcasts. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a podcast session.
Yeah, we'll do a podcast with...
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Podcasts with, like, the people who own the space?
Well, good luck getting him on the mic. The building managers, you mean?
Okay, so there's...
He actually is a rapper.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sympathetic to the arts.
Okay, mm-hmm. So something's coming together here.
Yeah. But he's a hard man to pin down, so...
He's a hard man to pin down. He's a good man, though. His name is Gotham.
Gotham.
That's a cool name, right?
Yeah. That's a good... Like, you say he's like a landlord sort of thing?
Yeah, sort of. We made this record in an old pharmaceutical plant that was abandoned by the giant pharmaceutical company in 2008. Maybe not abandoned, but they moved out of it and sold the building. And we moved in and built a studio on the second floor.
It's a former HR office.
Yeah, the former HR office of this major pharmaceutical company's original building. No, wait, the original building is actually across the street, but it's a building that's been around for 80, 90 years. It's huge. It's like the size of a big hospital. Mm-hmm. And when we moved in, there wasn't very many tenants. But that's where we made almost all of this record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people can basically just picture in their heads listening a big Brooklyn factory that has been around for a century.
Yeah, that's, and imagine like a bunch of empty like science labs where...
Lights are on all day, every
Lights
day.
Are on.
No one's around.
Yeah, like weird, big pill machines still. I wouldn't even know what to call them.
I actually learned what they're called because I found out that my landlady, God bless her soul, she passed away last year. She had previously worked in the same building that we made our record in, but she was a factory girl on the night shift from 1951 to 1975. And I was only when I saw her like severance packages arriving at the door that, or you know, something to do with that I asked her, "You work at Pfizer? I work at the old building." And she, you know,
Caroline's just revealed the name of the company.
Oh yeah.
Mm. No promo on the Ultimate.
No, not at all. But she told me some really interesting stories. She gave me sort of like she sat me down and gave me some brandy and gave me a walkthrough of what the building used to be room by room. And I found out all sorts of stuff about it that we never would have known otherwise. But those big machines that are like the size of this room, they're like these rotating drums that they put powders in. They're called hoppers.
Hoppers.
And we have definitely hopped inside of the hoppers because they're big enough.
Gotham isn't listening.
Anyway, can't tell you all our secrets.
But yeah, I was going to say, that's just the most badass name for a landlord in New York. Like, yo, Gotham wants a rent check.
Yeah.
Gotham does want a rent check. In general.
It's cool, right?
Yeah, so did you make the entire album in this space?
Yeah, about 95% of it. There's a few little bits and pieces we did in L.A. with Robin Hannibal, who produced a couple of songs with us.
Some stuff was done at home on my own or on my laptop before bringing it in.
We did stuff on laptops. You can make music on laptops now.
Yeah, it's a cool new thing.
Someone should tell Skrillex that.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd have a lot of fun with that.
So, see, I wasn't sure if you completely self-produced the album, but so you said this one person helped out a little bit.
Yeah, we had pretty much, I mean, it's mostly self-produced. There's a couple songs where we had been working on them for a while, like maybe a year or even longer. And we wanted to bring in somebody with some fresh ears to bring some life to it and
sprinkle some magic dust on
top. Yeah, and we met Robin Hannibal, who we didn't know before that. And
yeah, he's young. He's like our age.
He's from Denmark, right?
Yeah.
But we hit it off with him immediately, and I heard some of... He has this record called Bobby. He does a lot of work with other artists, but he did this like solo EP called Bobby that I as soon as I heard it, I loved it, and I loved his production work on it. And he came, he added the big fat 808 bass on Cha-Ching, which wasn't there before.
So, and that's like a very memorable part of the album.
And then I got in there and I'm trying not to cuss.
You can.
I got in there and screwed with it a little bit. Like, did all the, like, pitchy down things, and he had added in the boom, 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 and then I did boo.
Yeah, we brought Cha-Ching to him, we brought Show You Off, and what was the third one?
Moth of the Flame,
that's right. Yeah. So Robin sprinkled his magic on those three.
Okay, because as you had that pause and you were trying to think of the song, I was thinking, like, Moth of Flame, because you said, like, the big bassy part in Cha-Ching. I was just thinking, where else is something like that on the album? That big, heavy, driving beat, like, that makes you want to dance on Moth of Flame.
Well, that basic groove was already in place before that song was brought to him, but the Robin's most poignant contribution to Moth is that big snare fill going into the last chorus. It's very, like, you know, very, you know, and we laughed when we first heard it because we thought, oh man, that's a very sort of commercial thing that we would never do ourselves. And then after listening to it three times, we were like, nope, there's no way that's leaving. We love that way too much. Good. That is not going anywhere. So...
Sometimes we have a hard time doing the super, like, obvious thing, and that was something that Robin helped us not be afraid of in certain places. And and maybe it's just because neither of us ever quite think of that super obvious thing right off the bat.
Sometimes the reason the obvious thing is obvious is because it works really well. But
yeah, and I bet just having some, cause probably when you're working with something that you're creating for a really long time and just like going over it time and time again, just having like a fresh set of ears and eyes come in, take a look at it, just find something new that you wouldn't have thought about.
It's huge. It's important. And we've always found different ways of doing that on all the records we've made.
Definitely.
And then you want to take it to a mixer. It's like, we could mix the record ourselves, but at the end of it, it's like, you want to hand it all off to somebody who's just hearing it for the first time and see what else they can do.
I think in general, the thing that Patrick and I need a third pair of ears for is usually subtraction. Because both of us love layering. We'll layer and layer and layer and layer. And when we started out making this record, we both said to ourselves, we want to make... a record that has more space in it, you know, more audio space in it than anything we've made before, and it has more empty space, more negative space. And I think songs like Unfinished Business, for example, were sort of like, you know, that almost is the character of that song, is how empty it is. Or like the song that's the closer of the record, which is called No Such Thing as Illusion. But then with the pop songs, particularly Show You Off, we had such a hard time because we were just jam-packing that song full of sounds and they weren't all sitting together. And then it was, you know, it's nice to have a pair of ears like Robin who actually just comes in and mutes stuff and then it sounds great. So you know.
Take out some tracks.
Kill some of your children and then
exactly.
Everybody eats, man.
Toss them into the hops.
Yeah.
Robin's listening today. Thanks for killing our babies.
He's just shaking his head like, But yeah, we're getting better at that too, as we just have more experience as producers, both working on our own stuff and stuff with other people and independently. I think we're learning, you know, just with experience, how an arrangement shakes down and how you know when you have too much.
Yeah. So I still get the impression that you two had more control, more of everything over this album than the first two albums. Would you say that's true?
In some ways, I do think that that's true. It's not like that we didn't have enough control before, but I I think from the beginning of making this record, we knew what we wanted our approach to be from the very beginning. And the whole process was designed by the two of us and not by anybody else. We were actually like at a turning point in our career where we were switching managers, so we didn't have a manager for the first year and a half
of making this album.
Like the A&R that had signed us to Columbia was gone, and it was just kind of the two of us for the first time, just kind of on our own, like thinking like, what are we gonna do next? And
it was kind of awesome.
And
manager, no A&R. We were just sort of, we didn't really need it. We were sort of in a bubble, just on our own working.
Yeah. So we hit up one of the big guys at Columbia, and we were just like, hey, we want to do it like this. We want to move into this old pill factory and produce the record ourselves. And no, we haven't written anything yet, but we're going to get on it ASAP, and we're going to do it at our own pace. And it worked out for us, I think.
But I think it might not have worked out for us any earlier in our careers. Like you were saying, it might sound like we have more control on this record than ever before. And I think it's also because our skill sets are more precise. And so we can think, you know, we have more detailed ideas of what we want than we did at the beginning. You know, at the beginning, we were thinking more in terms of genre or like big strokes, like, oh, we want the song to have a slide guitar and we want there to be some country lyrics. Okay. And then we want to make it sort of psychedelic by adding delay. And we weren't really thinking in terms of, you know, what we wanted the color of the sound to be like, or we wanted, you know, to do with rhyme scheme, or what we wanted to do with our snare sound. Whereas now, you know, we think in much more precise terms. So, you know, I think another thing that's sort of very chairlift is that we jump all over in terms of dynamic within a record. Like on the first one, it almost was like a mixtape that, from song to song, it was like, is this even the same band? And then on the second record, we got the palette quite consistent, but even mood-wise, it jumped around a lot. And then this time, I think, you know, we could actually think in those terms too, even before we'd written anything. We had a sort of flavor in mind that we wanted. Flavor.
Caroline's making very...
What's that share of flavor?
Hand gesture.
It's an inside joke, but
okay.
But yeah, I think you know we're dialing it in with everything we do. It's part of the journey.
Yeah, so I find it really interesting, you guys being artists who came from really like an independent background, being with Columbia now and doing really neat things with them. And you mentioned the changeover and just basically the two of you pitching your plan for this. What is it like being like coming from where you came from? That independent world and working in this, you know, in the industry.
When we first jumped into it, because Columbia signed us right after we released our first record, so we didn't make that first record with them. We made that with an indie label, and then they bought it. But it was really our last record, our second record, which is called Something, that we got a taste of working with a major label for the first time.
Yeah, and we had to learn how to navigate that whole process, and I feel like it's a big turning point for the music industry in general. And so everybody was trying to navigate it, and like, you know, with like pop and indie music like becoming, there was less like definition between them. I don't know. Everybody's kind of figuring out how to navigate it.
Yeah, I mean, the industry itself was really restructuring itself around that time too. It was like just hemorrhaging, you know, trying to figure out how to make digital and streaming a sort of salable thing. So a lot of people were losing their jobs while we were there. There was a sort of like fear in general in the industry at that time. And then we were, I mean, I can speak for myself more than for Patrick, but I was pretty generally defensive at that time. I didn't want to be a slick major label canned kind of thing. And so I felt like at every possible junction, I was sort of like keeping that at arm's length and saying, no, we are this, no, we are this, you know, these are our references, and it's unusual, and it's dark, and it's complex, and it's, you know, it's self-contained, and we don't want this help. And then something between then and now changed, both in the industry and with us. And now I think maybe just we're grown up and maybe just more confident, but we're working much more closely with the label and saying, okay, here's the feeling one want to achieve, and here's how you guys can help, and here's what we can give you so that you can make your motor work, and here's what you can give us so our motor can work. And it's so harmonious now. And it's also, you know, some of the people on our team at the label now we've been working with for 6 years, and we just know each other really well. So it's, I don't know, it feels it feels good now.
And I get the impression that even though it was just the one album with K9, that being able to have a little bit of time to put music out before the major label game, to put things out with an indie label and kind of get your footing, get some confidence, that must give you like lots of perspective, like a foundation now.
It's hard to say. Can't imagine it happening any other way.
Because some artists will just like put up a couple singles that go to like number one on Hype Machine or something.
Right.
They get offered a major label contract and they take it because, I mean, it's the best thing on the table for them. And then after that, it can be rough.
It's a lot of pressure. That's true.
Yeah, I think people get a false impression that like a label can really like do things for you. I'm not saying they don't do anything.
I feel like
it's
what they should do.
But it's like more than artists relying on labels, and I feel like anybody at a good record label would agree with this. It's like they like working with artists who know what they want to do and like have a clear vision. It's like they're not necessarily trying to turn you into something.
Yeah.
They want to sign people that have a strong vision. And if you're not at the right point in your career when you like get signed to a major label contract or whatever, and then you're assuming like, okay, now I can like sit back and just do whatever they tell me. That's not what they're looking for. I think that they do better with artists that are like
driven.
That are driven and keep moving things forward.
When I was a kid, I used to have this idea that, like, you know, you'd look at a big famous pop star, and you know, this was like little alt punk middle school Caroline, and I would say like, oh, that's not the artist. That's just a bunch of label people, and the artist is just sort of a face for it, just like a money making puppet. But I'm not sure if it's simply that things have changed, but from the experience that we've had in the industry,
it's that way at all.
It's mind-blowing how the people who are very successful, you know, regardless of whether or not I like their music, they wake up foaming at the mouth for it. Doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen by a bunch of label people working, pushing your image. You have to want it real bad. That's the only way it happens now.
Yeah.
And I think that's reassuring, too, for an artist. Cause
it's true.
It know, should be, I think.
And from a label's perspective, it makes sense because the artist who's very driven, like you said, Caroline, they're making the label's job easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and also I think the sort of album you guys made with Moth is very... If I was someone who was hip to like interesting stuff at a major label, that's what I would want to put out because... It's like an R&B, like already like lots of people into indie music or alternative like you guys. And I feel like people who like R&B music who might not really know who Chairlift is would hear those songs and really like it.
I hope so. I'm like,
you guys are like, yeah, this sounds good.
I hope so. I've been a massive R&B fan for forever, for most of my life. It's been a huge influence on me.
Yeah, I'm interested in like some stuff you've produced because you did the Wet album recently.
Yeah, I did parts of the Wet album. They did a lot of it themselves. So I don't want to take too much credit, but they're my little babies. I love them.
Yeah, what is it about working or like fostering like talent with newer artists? What makes you enjoy that?
I feel like I've always had a natural tendency to do that. With a lot of the people that I work with, it's for me, it's about like discovering something new and like working with people at the early points in their career. And like when when an artist is like trying to discover their sound. And now, actually, after being, you know, I've been working as a musician and a producer since 2008, and for somebody that's just coming into it now, it's like I have 6 or 7 years of experience, and a lot of things have changed, some things haven't, and I think I have at least an interesting perspective on how to make records the way that you want to make records, and kind of, and not buying into too much else except for making the record that you want to make. I don't know how to sell records, but I do know how to make, how to help people make the records that they want to make.
Yeah, basically the sentiment we were all talking about the artist who just has their vision. Like you're saying, you're helping them zero in on what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick's also a good producer for an artist who's just starting out. It's, he never puts pressure on anyone in the studio. It's very like comfortable environment.
Mm-hmm.
You never. I mean, I remember when we were just getting started, you know, we'd end up doing sessions, or I'd end up doing guest vocals with different people. And I definitely know the feeling of showing up to like a slick studio with some guy who wants to make sure that you know that they know everything.
Mm. Oh, a serious producer.
Yeah, a very serious one, right? But there's a lot of those people out there who artists end up in the hands of when they're just getting started. But Patrick's not one of them.
No. I like for people to be comfortable. And I think there was something like with Wet, I got in with them right when they were about to embark on making their first full-length record. And my relationship with them, I saw a lot of what we had been through 6 or 7 years before. I saw them like going through it. They had like this sort of label frenzy around them. Everybody wanted to sign them, and then they were coming into my studio, which I had just convinced our studio, which we had just convinced like Columbia Records to those.
Gotham Studio.
Yeah, let's be real.
Yeah. Where we had just like gotten the label to, you know, fund this kind of quirky idea for how to make a record, and it was a very safe space, and it was a very creative space, and I think in those couple of months we just started to trust each other a lot, and that's important with people you're making records with. You gotta trust them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there anything you're working on right now or coming up that you can talk about?
I'm working on an EP with this girl, Kelsey Liu, who is amazing. She's a cellist and a singer. And we just recorded an EP in this church in Greenpoint.
Okay.
It's like a live recording. And I've just been mixing that this past week. Mm. And it's amazing. She's stunning.
Yeah, incredible talent.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And she did... she played cello on the Wet record when I did the strings for that record.
Mm. There are a lot of reverb puns that you guys are making in the studio with the word Wet, because, you know, for non-nerds, Wet, when you're in a recording studio, you're talking, you're saying, can you make it wet or can you make it dry? Or you're just talking about reverb saturation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So is there... Did that happen a lot, or is that
record
just so not
ended
funny?
Up very wet with Tom Elmhurst at the
but was
mixing
that a,
console.
Was that something you guys even laughed about, or was that just so
I
not
try,
even?
I try not to make any remarks about a band's name in the studio.
It's a good rule.
Well played. See, I wouldn't. That's where you and I are different.
Otherwise,
Patrick. I would have like
otherwise,
really exploited that.
Chairlift never would have gotten anything done.
No. Well, don't make me say what your first band name was, Patrick.
I've had some bad band names.
Can you say anything?
I think Wet's a good band name.
I think Wet's a great band name.
Yeah. Mm. Can I say no?
No.
No.
I don't think Chairlift is a good band name, but we're stuck with it. Hopefully, we're at that point where like you know where people stop questioning what it is. I remember when I first heard the name, like TV on the radio, I was like, that's a horrible band name. And then I heard the music and I love the music and I never thought about it again. But same thing with Portishead, same thing with Radiohead. I was like, these names are horrible, but they all make a wonderful music.
So. Go away eventually.
It just sort of becomes like this, like a subconscious thing when you just, you don't even think about the words. They're so common.
Yeah.
You know? You wipe the smile off your face. So I will know you're done with. But if you win you in my heart, isn't that what you want? I want to talk about a chairlift show I was at recently. It was National Sawdust in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. It was a really good show. One thing I was thinking of on the way out, so follow me on this and see if this connects. Especially on the album Something, I've always felt like vibes of new age music in chairlift, okay? And as the show ended, the first two songs the DJ played were Return to Innocence and Enya Sail Away. And I was like, this is perfect. So was that planned?
No, but I will confess that I pretty much only listen to New Age music outside the studio. And it's actually becoming almost problematic to the point that I'm wondering, oh my God, am I getting old or what's going on? Because that's all I listen to. I make like playlists that are like yoga playlists or like bath time playlists, and that becomes the only thing I want to listen to. I think especially living in a place like New York City, when you're so when your senses are so overstimulated and when you're so busy, that I find myself so drawn to really calm and really beautiful music. Right, I guess for the last 6 months, a record that I've been obsessively listening to is a project called Bing and Ruth. They have a record that came out last year called Tomorrow Was the Golden Age. And they have a new record they put out more recently, but their previous one is the one I keep listening to. It's so beautiful. It's simple piano strings. I think there's some flute, but it's all so processed by way of looping and reverb that it just becomes this sort of cloud. And it's so nice. But yeah, I do listen to a lot of New Age music. I was raised on New Age music effectively because when I was a kid, I had I think severe is the wrong word, but I was very ADHD and I had divorced parents. And my mom would notice that when I would come back from staying at my dad's house for the weekend, I'd get really wound up. I was, you know, excited to be back at my mom's house, and it would be 9 p.m. and she'd be trying to put me to bed and I would just be running around the house and she couldn't get me to calm down. So she started buying New Age albums at Barnes & Noble's just based on the album covers.
Okay.
And would put, you know, be things like Rainforest music or like, I mean, obviously Enya, like Harold Budd, stuff like that. And so I grew up listening to that kind of music ambiently. And then in school, when I was studying, I was a philosophy minor, and that work, it requires so much focus. I would listen to Brian Eno, Music for Airports, or Mark Isham, Vapor Drawings. And that music was hugely influential on my synth practice, the kind of synthesizer music I like to make. So what you're hearing is real. However, we did not select those two songs. That was our sound guy, David.
That was perfect then.
Yeah. Hi, David.
So what was? Remind me the name of the strings and piano project you've been listening to.
The band is called Bing and Ruth, B-I-N-G and R-U-T-H. And the album is called Tomorrow Was the Golden Age.
Okay. So I need to dig deeper with this stuff because I basically listen to like the Enya Standards and Pure Moods. I need to do better.
Oh,
than that.
No. Yeah, it goes that those are like the.
It's like, come on.
Yeah, that's like the Coca-Cola of ambient music. Goes deep.
Okay. But yeah, I admit when I talk about New Age music, I don't really know what I'm talking about.
Well, a good place to start with New Age music is sort of like when it started, it was the early 80s, and there was a label, an American label called Windham Hill, that was making the best.
Okay.
It was doing like fusion and world, but not in that like tacky way that you'd expect. But like, for example, Steve Jobs was a big fan, and it's even in his biography that talks about how he was living in this apartment with like one piece of furniture and his Windham Hill records. So I think Windham Hill actually became that, that label actually became the sort of sound that our idea of technology and like luxury technology actually is still referencing.
Yeah, I got the vibe on most tracks on Something, especially a song like Frigid Spring. that.
Well, that's an homage to 60s psych. Okay. Song.
And the one on the new album where I get it the most, definitely more than others, is "Crying in Public."
Oh,
yeah,
that's awesome.
The way your vocals sound, it's that like entrancing, calming feel.
There's a section right after the chorus when the sound of the vocals change. It gets really airy.
Yeah.
Love will be.
That's it. Yes, that.
Yeah. I call that kind of vocal tone Wendy, and Wendy was the background singer in the 80s band called Prefab Sprout. And Wendy's vocals are always processed in a really signature way. Always, they almost sound auto-tuned, even though they didn't exist at the time, and really airy and almost kind of angelic. So that was a little Wendy moment on that song.
Where else is Wendy in Chairlift Music?
Oh, Wendy's all over the place.
I Belong in Your Arms in the chorus when you sing.
That's almost too like bouncy.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. A song off our last record called Turning. That's There's a little Wendy in there.
Take It Out on Me. Where you sing Take It Out on Me.
No, that's like almost full like.
Okay.
I don't know. That's like almost too like dramatic. It'll come to me. It'll come to me. There are some other, particularly backing vocals.
Okay.
Mentally going through our songs right now. There's a little bit in Polymorphing. Those things.
Okay.
All throughout it.
So do you have other names or other...
I
feel like I just dug into something bigger. Besides Wendy, what else is there?
Oh, man. Well, there's Tots, which is short for Tatsuro Yamashita, who's a Japanese funk singer that I'm obsessed with. And he does this really sort of swoopy thing. Have you ever seen swallows hunting for insects at dusk?
You'll be
at a friend's swimming pool and the sun's going down and suddenly there's a bird that is like, whoa, that thing just passed way too close to my head. But his voice sort of does that. It just goes, woof.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And I love it. And I was listening to a lot of Tatsuro Yamashita while we were making this record. So there are a couple moments like in Show You Off and in Moths of the Flame where there's what I call like a Tots ad lib.
Mm.
What else do we have?
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's all coming to life now.
You are what you eat, man.
I want to talk about dancing too. Dancing has definitely been a big part for you, Caroline, in some of Chairlift's videos for I Belong in Your Arms, for Ching. Where did it start for you with dancing? Were you ever like take classes? Did someone teach you? Did you dance with, like where did your dancing start?
Well, I don't claim to be a dancer, but I do love dancing.
Would you say that it started with Eminem Amnesia?
It started with Eminem Amnesia in a hotel room in London. And we just, we'd done our very first session with Dan Carey. It was sort of like a test session that we did with him before we decided to produce the record with him. We flew to London for a couple days. Mm-hmm. And we spent one day in the studio with him, and I think we retracked a vocal or something. And I was back in the hotel room. It was afternoon, and I put the Bounce on my laptop and found myself in front of the mirror. I had just gotten out of the shower, nude, wet, in front of the mirror, doing these. It looked like sign language. And that was really cool to me, doing essentially surrealist sign language to this song. And so I had that thought in my mind, okay, I want to make a sign language music video for this song. And then when it finally came time to make the music video, the sign language just evolved to be bigger and bigger and bigger and take over my whole body. And so it became dancing. And I effectively choreographed this thing that I wasn't even physically able to do because I couldn't gracefully string all the different movements together. So I met a girl at the buffet table of a Meredith Monk benefit that Chairlift played at. We were both hovering over the buffet table, and she mentioned she was a dancer. And I said, oh, do you have a card? I need help from a dancer with something. And she's... Jury, and she became one of my closest and best friends. But she coached me with Amnesia. She came, we booked time at a dance space, and she helped me string all the different pieces together in one fluid way, like, essentially helped me make connections so that I could just do all the moves in sequence. And then she went on to coach the Ramona Lisa project that I did 2 years ago, which is sort of similar. But movement is a really cool way to explain lyrics to people without having to get literal. You can stay abstract and you can stay expressionistic, but, you know, it's like illustration. It's like moving illustration. So it's also really, really fun. It's an adventure because especially coming at it as a non-dancer, I don't really have the vocabulary and I don't really have a sense of what's good and what's bad. So I feel like it just comes down to risk. Like, how far are you willing to expose yourself? How far are you willing to go to expose yourself? And also how much are you willing to work? Because it's never going to look good unless you work hard. I'm not a natural dancer by any means. So I do have to practice to make things look acceptable.
Yeah. Go ahead, Patrick.
I was going to say I'm a very natural dancer.
Okay.
Patrick is. The more he drinks, too, I will say. The footwork gets more complex with this one.
So you're someone who dances a lot more from like the waist down, like lots of feet action?
I use it all, Chris.
What I want to start doing is like exploiting the fact that we have this bad band name of Chairlift and and start to do like chair choreography, like for fans to be able to do to the songs too. So it's like chair dancing. Mm-hmm. So if you're like at work and you're listening to Polymorphing, there's like a dance you can do in your chair.
That could be kind of incorporated with people, you know, people who sit on those big blow-up balls because it's better for your back, or stand-up desks.
Medicine balls, right?
Yeah, with like this revolution in office sitting culture, turning it into an exercise. There you go.
This is a good idea.
You could try that
chair
out.
Chair dancing.
In the old Billboard office, we did have someone who sat on a medicine ball. We don't have that now, but we do have a couple stand-up people.
Our managers have a very futuristic office. Sometimes you walk in there and everyone's at their standing desks. They even had like custom Nike sneakers made with their names embroidered on them. It's very cute. They go to the office, put their sneakers on, stand at their desks. It's like a new world.
They got that sponsorship.
They actually probably did. Sup, Nike?
That's funny. I have a friend who works in Tennessee somewhere. I forget what he does. He used to be a bass player in one of... my first band.
Which is called what?
That band was called Habit, with two B's. Like the Nuns Hat. Like the Nuns Hat.
So I tried to trick you there.
Yeah.
It gets worse.
That was one of the... That wasn't such a bad name. But he was testing out Moth, you know, our new record, in his cubicle at work. And I think he texted me. He was like, this is... It's great cube rock. Or he like invented a name for this like
cubicle.
Cube rock? Does that can that be a new terminology?
That's like my life because I write about a lot of rock music for Billboard and I work in office with a cubicle. Mm-hmm. So you basically just define my life.
Is there certain music that works better in that situation?
Enya music. For when I want to chill out in my cubicle.
Enya's
But it's political, right? Because you can't play stuff that's going to piss off your cubicle neighbors.
Oh, I have headphones on. But yeah.
Ooh, I see.
I'll have to ask him if he was wearing headphones or not.
Yeah. There's lots of social aspects to that, because you could have a headphones office, because like at Billboard it's like that because everyone's listening to music during the day, so mm-hmm. you can't have one person picking. But if it was probably any other kind of place that didn't revolve around music, it might be a social thing where there's like one, you know, person in charge of that who's the music person who plays the music, and everyone else goes kind of like, oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. I was at an office recently where they had a no headphones rule, which I thought was kind of interesting, because it means that everyone has to be in this sense of like, I'm responsive and I'm here and we're here together, we're working together now. I forget where that was.
Mm-hmm. And at our office, it's just, you're going to listen to this one song over and over again all day until it's perfect.
Yep.
Because the office is where the song is made.
Yeah. Actually, while we were doing a lot of our making of our record, there was a charity that moved in on the other side of our studio. And those poor people working in a windowless cubicle office, just hearing the drum beat for Show You Off for a year.
Yeah.
We felt like we owed them like a cocktail party when the album was done to like come listen to the songs. But they moved out.
Mm-hmm.
They asked us to build a second wall. And then they moved out a couple months later. They used to be Chairlift fans.
Man, I'm so glad we're talking about offices. This was not expected. And I would think that you, being musicians and touring a lot, one would just think that offices would never be on your mind because you seem just very far away from office life. But, yeah, I guess 2016 New York, everyone's just sort of caught up in an office.
My husband works in an office, so I get to hear about it every day.
Nice. Hear about the water cooler?
No, they don't have a water cooler, but I do hear about like lunch hour politics, you know, like he didn't get to take his lunch hour, his lunch hour got moved back or things like that.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be about like, oh, someone sat down at the lunch table and everyone else got up and left.
No.
he works at an elementary school.
Love it.
He probably wouldn't mind, actually.
One other thing I definitely want to ask you guys for your opinion on. What do y'all think of new Beyonce song and video, Formation?
I think that it's the best video I've maybe ever seen, ever.
Yeah, the imagery in that video is so strong. It almost, that car sinking scene is like, it reminded me of something out of a Jodorowsky film. It's just so on the money and intense. The song is... There's so many, it almost feels like it's five songs packed into one, not musically, but message-wise. I think the general message is really important, which is that, you know, black people need to love themselves and not, you know, not be ashamed for any part of their physiology. And I feel that way about everyone in general, but, you know, it's particularly, I think, important to discuss that right now.
Yeah, so hopefully more Beyonce things coming forward.
Oh, I have no doubt. I feel like this is just the beginning of a bunch of stuff that she's about to drop.
Yeah, are you going to the tour?
I don't have tickets yet, but I really want to. Yeah, we should go.
Colombia.
I got tickets to one of the shows at Barclays a couple years ago, and there's this, and I had these good tickets that her sister had given me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, there was a second stage and like midway through the concert, she like gets on this, she like flies out to the second stage, like flies over the audience. And then I was like front row for this part of the show. And I swore that she looked at me and she waved and smiled. And I was like, oh my God, I swear. I'm like, hitting my wife, not hitting my wife, but like tapping my wife, like, fuck, Beyonce,
she's
just
probably looking at the same direction. She probably saw it.
She just, I swear, she just like waved at us. She just smiled and waved at us. And Jill's like, nah, there's no way.
She's just.
But then
jealous,
I was talking to Solange a couple days later. I was like, I swear, your sister saw me and she waved in the middle of the concert. And then she like hit up her sister. She's like, she saw you that way.
Was she's like, oh, yeah, 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 it was for yeah, you. Patrick, tell you. Tell him yeah.
Yes, that was a highlight of one of the great moments of my life. When Beyonce picked me out of the crowd and just gave me a little wave.
You're going to carry that forever. Like, I mean, that's forever. A big thing for anyone.
Write it on your tombstone, Patrick.
Yeah.
Got the Bay Wave.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
That Bay. Sounds so San Francisco.
The Bay Wave.
Ride the Bay Wave. So, pretty much covers everything I wanted to talk about. I think we touched on a lot of interesting things. Some of them I did not expect to talk about.
Cube Rock. And yeah. Wait, no.
I was hoping we would talk a lot about Enya. Mm-hmm. I was hoping.
What else?
To recap.
Mm-hmm.
Some projects coming up that you're working on, Patrick.
Yeah.
This was fun. So yeah, that's the show. As you could probably tell, I had a blast talking to those two, and I hope you enjoyed it also. So yeah, if you liked that, would love to hear feedback you have about the show. Hit me up on Twitter at @cpainonaplane, or like I said before, just a star rating on iTunes helps immensely with everything we do on the podcast. You can get there by clicking on the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story. If you're viewing this on billboard.com, that is, go to like the bottom graph. It's right there, or you can just search for Alt in Our Stars. That's the name of the show. Search for that on iTunes. You can go to the archived episodes there. Subscribe to the podcast. A new one drops every Friday afternoon on billboard.com. Can't really give any hints or give away who I have coming up on the podcast, but I can say that I'm just very, very excited with a couple people who are going to be on. Some of the biggest artists we've had so far, some of the most exciting, like this one. I'm very, very excited for where Alt in Our Stars is headed. So, yeah, definitely welcome all the feedback. It's fantastic. Until next week, have a good weekend, everybody. Peace out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.